he's in Racine, 53 in Kenosha. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg up next.
Support for WGTD comes from Jack and Drea, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, newly reimagined for 2019. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. More information at jackanddrea.com. Jack and Drea, a proud supporter of WGTD's morning show. And we welcome you to the Wednesday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I'm very happy that we can spend the first half of today's morning show talking about what sounds like an absolutely marvelous project called Two Worlds, One Art. A very exciting exchange between students here at UW Parkside and a university in China. And this is largely a musical collaboration, although by no means is it limited to the realm of music. And we want to talk in particular about two exciting opportunities you can take advantage of to hear the singers of Parkside and the singers of Zhejiang University in China, Wuhan, China, in concerts on May 24th and 25th. Here to talk about Two Worlds, One Art is, first of all, Dr. James Kinchin, who is the Director of Choral Activities at the University of Wisconsin Parkside. And we're also really pleased that we can have with us Dr. Leslie Hines-Walker, who is Dean of the College of Arts and Humanities at the University of Wisconsin Parkside. And she has had a very significant hand in the shaping of this project and making it possible. So I'm really glad that both of them can be here. We welcome both of you, Dr. Kinch and Dr. Walker, to the morning show.
Good morning.
Good morning, Greg.
Good to have you here. Good to have you here. Dean Walker, I want to make sure our listeners know who you are and how long you've been at Parkside. Do I remember correctly? You became dean in 2015 or something like that?
Exactly. It was September 2015. And so just finished 4 years.
And were you at Parkside before that, or is that when you came to Parkside?
That's when I came to Parkside. I was at Indiana University South Bend in South Bend, Indiana, for most of my career as a French professor.
Very good. So I'm sure there was a lot on your plate as Dean of College of Arts and Humanities. Can you sum it up in a nutshell?
Yes.
The answer can be no.
Yeah, so, exactly what do you want me to sum up? Because I'm not exactly sure I understand your question.
Just what your responsibilities are.
Oh, what my responsibilities are. So what I like to say to folks is that I think my first responsibility is as chief cheerleader of the college. I support the efforts of our students, first and foremost, to give them as many opportunities and an excellent education. And I do that through support of our faculty, primarily. And then I have the normal administrative duties that you would imagine, overseeing schedules, hiring, and that sort of thing. But I would say my major responsibility is to support our students and their success and opening the doors for them. And I do that through support of our faculty.
And I suppose it is important that you, for instance, have been such a great supporter of this particular project, Two Worlds, One Art. I mean, I'm sure something like this just doesn't happen without that kind of support.
Exactly. It's I think it's important. Two Worlds in One Art has been a big collaboration at Parkside. It really started actually in the business college in CBEC, because they are the folks that have had or have the original relationships with Zhonghan University in China. And there was a delegate of the vice president and a series of other folks who came about 2.5 years ago, and I had a chance to meet them. And at that time, they expressed interest in our arts and particularly in our music department. And within 6 months, we were able to welcome a scholar and soprano, Lily Zhang, for a 6-month stay at the University of Parkside. And so that's really how it began. But the provost had to write the letter to invite her. So it was a real university effort to get her here. But we were just lucky that they are interested in what we're doing in music at UW Parkside.
Interesting. So in some respects, this began as an overture from them.
It did, indeed.
Very good. So one of the things you were mentioning before we went on the air is the fact that what we are talking about, and I guess I touched on it very briefly in the introduction, is that this is in some respects an unconventional exchange, because it is such a rich and comprehensive exchange. Explain to our listeners just, in a sense, kind of the dimensions, the depth of this project.
So I'll start with my sort of my coming up as a teacher and scholar of French. And I've had an opportunity to take lots of classes and students to Europe. And one of the, I think, most important aspects of student travel is giving them the opportunity to actually interact and get to know the people that we're visiting. And so I think that that's the really unique aspect of this project, is that we are going to have the opportunity to host for a week Zhonghan University's choir. They're going to be 23 students will be on campus. They arrive on Monday, and our voices at Parkside are going to function as their hosts. So they're going to have really an opportunity to get to know these kids. They're going to host them. We're going to go to Chicago, the Art Institute. We're going to show them the Midwest in all of its glory. Mm-hmm. We'll spend some time in Kenosha. We're going to spend some time in Racine. We're going to go to Chicago. So in addition to singing together, they're also going to spend time together. They're going to share meals together. And then 10 days to 2 weeks later, our students will be going to China. And they will spend a week in Wuhan on the Zhonghan campus and virtually, basically do the same thing with those kids there. They will they'll continue their course in Chinese history and culture with Dr. George Wang. They will do rehearsals. They will get a chance to visit Wuhan, the city of Wuhan. And they will also perform two concerts there. So like I said, for me, what's really unique about the project is this opportunity to have a true exchange between students.
Hmm. You were saying that this is actually a 4-credit course.
Correct.
And done in collaboration with the sociology department.
Yes. Our partner is George Wang, and George Wang is the director of the China Institute. He's one of these people that's, I think his specialty is actually in nonprofit organizations. But he's got a deep and abiding love of Chinese history and culture. And he's sharing that with us. And he's also working as our facilitator to make sure that all of our logistics work out. Because we're moving a circus here,
Very much. A beautiful circus. That's an apt metaphor, I have a feeling. Dr. Kinchin, has China ever figured in your professional life before in any significant way, or is this, in a sense, a relatively new adventure for you?
Well, I guess the kind of almost cliched response to that question would be that it is a quite sudden rising of the sun on my horizon. I had no idea before we began these connections with Zhonghan University that I would have any connection, any intercourse with China at all. But what a wonderful opportunity it's been for me professionally, and now for our students to have this opportunity to share not just music in a purely musical sense, but to share culturally. And I will say this, lest our dean be a little bit too modest, that even though all of the things sort of transpired as she described them, the delegation connecting first with our business people, that she has had the vision for this and has been a tireless supporter of what we have been doing, an advocate, a cheerleader, plus, you know, she's done everything from cheerleading to carrying the water bucket up and down the sidelines, you know, figuratively speaking. But the fact that we are here at this point, beginning to do this exchange, which will happen part one next week with the students coming here, and then part two in June with the students from our university going there, is greatly to her credit.
Very good. For those of you just joining us, we have in the studios Dr. James Kinchin, Director of Choral Activities at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, and Leslie Hines-Walker, who is Dean of the College of Arts and Humanities. Both of them have had a significant hand in the forging of this a wonderful project called Two Worlds, One Art, in which there are students from Zhonghan University in Wuhan, China, coming to Parkside, and then Parkside students, singers, who will be going to China then in direct exchange. And while the Chinese students are here, there will be two opportunities to actually hear those singers, both Parkside singers and from China, on May 24th and 25th. We'll talk about that concert in just a couple of minutes. Dean Walker, tell us more about Zhonghan University. What kind of a school is it? Is it roughly comparable to the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, or a very different sort of institution?
In some ways, I would say it's roughly comparable in the sense that Wuhan is, I think, the 10th largest city in China. I mean, Wuhan itself is 10 million people.
Wow.
So I think one of the things that one is struck by when one travels to China is the number, just the sheer number of people that live in China, at 1.3 billion, right?
Wow.
So it's enormous. And so in terms of scale, it's not the same, not on the same scale. There, Wuhan has got about 10,000 students, Zhonghan has about 10,000 students. The city of Wuhan has itself over a million students. There are 10 different universities and colleges.
Wow.
So just to give you a sense for the how many people they're trying to educate. But it's a campus that is very familiar. It they have similar kinds of subjects. They have a large music school. They have over, I think it's about 400, as I recall, music majors. So
wow.
that in terms of scale is bigger than we are. But at the same time, it's a town in the kind of, it's not exactly in the middle of China, but it's far from the coast. It's relatively far from Beijing, relatively far from Shanghai.
Sort of so, their Midwest.
Exactly, precisely.
Interesting. The heartland of China.
Yeah, the heartland. The Yangtze River runs through Wuhan. So as a Westerner, you have all of these sorts of kind of magical images that you would have in your mind of China. It's also the birthplace of Mao.
Ah.
Wuhan. So it was very at the when you go to China, on one hand, things seem very recognizable, not that different, and on the other hand, there's lots of, you know, it's vastly different than what we do here.
Sure. Dr. Kitchen, you with Dean Walker actually traveled to Wuhan at some point and actually did a little teaching there.
Yes.
So that was your direct introduction to this university,
yes,
and to this community in China. What was that experience like?
Oh, it was an amazing experience. I basically did two kinds of teaching there, in addition to doing a presentation for them and also being involved in a wonderful discussion about American choral music. But the teaching that I did focused on, one, working with that choir and teaching their choir, which has about 55 students, really fine choir. Some of the Western pieces that would become sort of the pool from which we would choose collaborative selections for this exchange.
Wow.
And so some of the titles are titles that you may know. Some of them we have kept, some of them not. For example, the Randall Thompson, Alleluia, Eric Whitaker's A Boy and a Girl, the old Morley Madrigal, Fire, Fire, My Heart, William Byrd's Motet Ave Verum Corpus are some examples of some of the things that I taught them in rehearsal.
So sort of chestnuts from our tradition.
Yes, yes, okay. Yes, absolutely. A couple of African-American spiritual settings, This Little Light of Mine, sublimely beautiful setting by John Wesley Work III, Moses Hogan's Battle of Jericho, you know, some other kinds of examples. And so in that setting, I got a chance to do some of the things that choral people would do, I suppose, universally, that is to be concerned with how they are sort of interpreting and bringing alive the basic elements of the text, all the way from rhythms and pitches to the more interpretive nuances of each piece within the context of style. So that was exciting. I had never had a chance to do that with people from a totally different cultural tradition. You know? And then the other part of my teaching had to do with master classes that I led for young conductors.
Ah.
I had about 16 conductors that I worked with, and each one one-on-one, they would conduct a piece for me, and then I would do what I could in interacting with them to help them elevate the level of their conducting, whether it was sensitivity to the score, whether it was gesture or whatever, much in the same way that I worked with conductors here.
Yeah.
And I had two rounds to do that. So that was a round 1 week where I got to see everybody and plant some seeds, and then the following week to come back and to see where they were in relation to the first time I'd seen them conduct, which was really great.
Wow.
And they were very receptive and very open. I can't begin to tell you how nice the students were in just accepting me and being really cordial and accepting what I was offering them in
Wonderful.
My teaching.
So when these students from China come here, and they'll be here for 10 days, did you say?
A week.
They'll be here for a week.
Yeah, the 20th to the 27th.
So some of that will be in preparation for these two concerts that will occur on May 24th and 25th.
Yes, yes.
And what kind of collaboration musically is going to occur between the two singers? It sounds like there'll be at least one piece that
yes.
they will sing together?
Well, no, it's going to be... So if you can think of the concert itself being divided into thirds, okay? One third will be theirs alone. And so the audiences who come will have the opportunity that most audiences in this part of the country have never had, and that is to hear choral singers sing Chinese music.
Mm.
Some of it will be traditional folk music. Some of it will be music that's been composed by Chinese composers. And then we will do a set. Our students will do a set. And then we will share a set. So the shared set, that will not be just one piece. The one piece that we're doing, The Moon Represents My Heart, which is the English translation, is a piece that we will sing in Mandarin as best we can, hopefully without too many slips and glitches with them. And that's going to be just really, really special. I didn't know that song before we began working on it, but it's something I understand is very popular in Chinese culture beyond just the choral setting. And it's a song that a very popular singer, Teresa Tang, has made, you know, very, very well known throughout China. So that's going to be special. And then we're doing four other pieces, which include, I mentioned the Randall Thompson Alleluia, Eric Whitaker's A Boy and a Girl, Moses Hogan's arrangement of The Battle of Jericho. And so we'll be doing all of those pieces together.
Wow. And so the groundwork has been laid for them. I mean, they they come here already knowing those pieces, but then the finishing touches will be made, as well as, in a sense, the blending of these two choirs together.
Yes.
How different, in general, is the singing in China in these kind of settings? I mean, do they have a profoundly different, for instance, choral method and or vocal method? And is that part of the challenge of making all of this blend well?
Well, there are some differences, and I don't think that in the final analysis they'll challenge us a great deal. For example, in their music reading, they tend to favor the fixed do system, which is different from ours. You know, we are more eclectic in terms of how we help students embrace the pitch aspect of music. But when we use solfege, it usually is a movable do system.
You know? Right. So if it's in C, do is C. If it's in F major, then do is F.
Right,
But they keep do in the same
always
place.
C. And in terms of the vocal sounds, they sing real nicely. I did find this out, that there are not a whole lot of, like, really outstanding solo voices at that university. As Dean Walker said earlier, there are several institutions of higher learning in Wuhan, and there is a conservatory where people who want to, let's say, study operatic arias and that sort of thing would go, and it is not Jianghan University. So there are more sort of good voices that are being developed in the choral tradition, which, of course, you know, has its pluses.
A lot of them for this kind of setting.
And as is almost always the case, we are embarrassed probably to admit, but it's always the case, it seems, when we connect with people abroad, their English is far, far superior to anything we can do with their language. So these kids are basically fluent, at least at a basic level, in English. Some of them to the point where they can converse with you in depth. Others of them a little bit more superficially. Hello, how are you?
Where's the bathroom?
Yeah, that sort of thing. Essential. But there's been, I think what I've seen is the things that they do chorally are going to be things that we can relate to very easily. So I'm just waiting for that first moment when we get together.
How thrilling that's going to be.
Yes.
And I'm glad to hear that their English is as good as it is, because, of course, one of the real tricks here, for instance, if you're trying to talk about musical nuances in a piece, it is not easy to do that if there is a huge language barrier that really prevents you from being able to use imagery or other sort of verbal subtleties to describe something or ask for something. So that's nice to hear that there is that possibility of connection. So we will have these two concerts then, and it looks like they are free and open to the public. So this is a real gift to the community for people to be able to hear these two groups. Explain exactly when and where these two concerts occur.
The concerts will be Friday, May 24th, on our campus in Francis Bedford Concert Hall, beginning at 7 p.m., and we will then repeat that program on Saturday, the 25th of May, at First Presbyterian Church in downtown Racine. And so we're really excited about that. I don't know whether I'm spilling beans that I shouldn't, but we're happy that someone from an official from the Chinese consulate is going to come to be present and offer some greetings on behalf of the Chinese government.
Fantastic.
Yes.
Yeah, it's the deputy council, the Chinese deputy council from Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. And then how soon after those concerts are sung do the Parkside students travel to China then?
So it's the 8th of June. They travel. They arrive on June 9. So you can sort of do the math there. It's a little over a week.
Mm-hmm.
They leave on a Monday. And then our students, you all board that plane.
And the assumption is that their experience in China will be roughly comparable to the experience that these Chinese students are having here at Parkside.
Yes. Right. So they'll be there for a week, but then they will also have the opportunity to do some touring in Beijing. So they'll be 3 or 4 days in Beijing. And the Chinese choir is doing the similar kind of thing. They're spending some time, I believe, in New York as well.
Wonderful. And you'll be on hand in case anybody needs a French translator.
Absolutely.
Well, this just sounds so incredibly exciting, and I certainly hope that at some point along the way we can have a follow-up morning show conversation to talk about what all of this ended up meaning for those who were participating. Maybe we can have a couple of Parkside students along
once they are back,
and yeah. It would be absolutely great to learn more about this exchange and also to talk about the possibility that this might even happen again and again yes. down the road. One
right.
can envision this being a very rich and rewarding relationship between the two schools.
Yes.
So once again, we want to remind everybody about this overall project called Two Worlds, One Art, and the opportunity to hear singers from Zhejiang University in Wuhan, China, and singers from UW Parkside in concert May 24th, that's Friday night, 7 p.m. at Francis Bedford Concert Hall, or Saturday night, 7 p.m. at First Presbyterian Church in downtown Racine. Two lovely places to experience choral music. And Dr. James Kinchin, Dr. Leslie Hines-Walker, I so appreciate both of you being here on the morning show to talk about this terrific project. We wish you well and all of the students who are going to be part of this joyous exchange, and thank you for being part of the morning show today.
Thank you,
Greg.
The time is 8:35, time for part two of today's program here on WGTD. This is the opening to an absolutely spectacular piece called Dance of the New World by Dana Wilson. And this is from a clavier compact disc called Wildflowers featuring the North Texas Wind Symphony. And we are going to be spending the next few minutes of WGTD's morning show talking with composer Dana Wilson because a new piece of his is going to receive its world premiere this weekend at the concert of the Lake Geneva Symphony Orchestra, a concert which they have titled Monumental Miniatures. And on a program that will feature music of Rossini and Smetana and Bizet, as well as a performance by their young artist competition winner, playing Mendelssohn, there will also be a brand new piece called Hold Fast to Dreams. And I'm very excited to be able to speak with Dana Wilson, who is a very, very well-known composer, particularly of instrumental music. He is the Charles A. Dana Professor Emeritus at Ithaca College School of Music. And Professor Wilson, welcome to the morning show. I'm honored to speak with you.
Thanks, Greg. It's terrific to talk to you as well.
So, first of all, it's always kind of interesting to talk with composers about where it all began, where their life as a musician, and then more specifically as a composer began. What is your story?
Well, I suppose started very early as a pianist who was pretty lazy at reading notes and wanted to improvise through the passages, even if it was Mozart. And I, unfortunately or fortunately, I continued in that direction and became a somewhat accomplished jazz pianist, and continued in that way, and at the same time realized that improvising is basically composing, and so I started to write stuff down. And as you heard probably in that opening clip that you played, there are certain jazz elements even in what we would call notated music.
Absolutely. So at what point did you start to become serious about composing in the sense of wanting to study it? I always find that that's typically a very interesting moment in a composer's life where they suddenly realize that just because it flows from their own pen doesn't mean that they're necessarily writing the best music they're capable of writing. For you, when was that sort of wake-up call that this was something worth studying?
Well, it was a really gradual process, and one reason was the experience I had as a child was most of the musicians I experienced were people like piano tuners and jazz players, and the classical realm and all that involved the so-called classical composition was a fairly remote phenomenon to me. When I grew up, if you studied music, quote, seriously at a conservatory, you were pretty much required to write atonal music. And it's not that I was against atonal music, but I didn't like the requirement aspect. Of course, today it's all changed, that there are all kinds of styles and multicultural thrusts in music as well as everything else. But then it was a challenge, and I thought I didn't think I'd want to be a composer because I didn't think that's where my heart lived. And so it was a really gradual process, and actually it wasn't until graduate school contemplating graduate school that to be a professional composer seemed to make some sort of sense.
You ultimately ended up, I think, at Eastman. Can you tell us
That's correct.
A little bit about your experience at Eastman, one of the country's most renowned music schools?
Well, it was an amazing experience for me. As I said, I hadn't had a lot of conservatory experience, a lot of people at the graduate level there, of course, it had all kinds of training and experience, and so it was a really deep and meaningful experience on so many levels, and I got to find out what it was to be a professional musician as well as hopefully, establish and improve my craft. And so it was just, every day was a revelation, literally, and it was kind of scary. But I think I learned a lot, and so in the end, it was good.
How would you summarize the way in which you have, over the years, improved as a composer? I'm really talking about those formative years when you were really studying the craft. What happened to your music, and what happened to you as a composer through the course of those studies in which, as you just said, you learned a great deal?
Well, it's sort of a cliche, but it's also true that the more you learn about how to say something meaningful, the more you get in touch with your deepest self. And I really feel that, and I feel that continues even in my extremely advanced age be true. And whether I write better music or worse music isn't really the point at this point. It's how can I most effectively say what's on my mind? And so the craft comes as a sort of arbiter between your sort of emotional and philosophical impulses and the piece at hand and the instrumentation at hand, and trying to negotiate those two and to ask yourself deep questions about where the music should go, but also technical questions. And so it's a really interesting process. And the weird thing is that every time you begin a piece, it's like you're back in graduate school trying to do it one more time.
Very good. I know that you have had a career at Ithaca College School of Music, which, speaking of fine music schools, is one of the very, very best. And I learned a lot more about Ithaca because a good friend of mine, Daniel Ehas, is one of their finest voice teachers, and Dr. Gregory Woodward was until recently a recent president of Carthage College, where where I teach on the music faculty. So I certainly have some sense of just how renowned that institution is and why. Tell us about your career there.
Well, thanks. Yeah, it was wonderful. I came here, meaning Ithaca, directly out of graduate school, and I liked it so much that I basically stayed my whole career, which is fairly unusual, as you know. And I had wonderful colleagues and inspiring students, and so I found it, as well as the area, if you're not familiar with it, it's not unlike where you live. It's just beautiful. Finger Lakes region, and we, meaning my family, really loves the outdoors, and so for all the above reasons, we stayed here and seemed to thrive.
So when you work with young composition students, typically what is most important in that interaction? What are sort of the guiding principles by which you seek to guide a young composer towards greater things?
Well, it's really a challenge these days because, as I mentioned, there was a time when there was a sort of orthodoxy, even though that shifted from, say, decade to decade. Today, one student will come in influenced by East Indian music. Another student will come in influenced by jazz. Another student will come in influenced by Bartok. And so really all you can do as a teacher is to really try to get a sense of what they're trying to do, what they're trying to say, and to help them to say it better, more effectively, more deeply, maybe more dramatically, depending on what they need. And that can entail very technical matters of rhythm and shape. It can be matters of form. It can be matters of orchestration. So within an hour's lesson, the best thing you can do as a teacher is to try to zone in on which of those elements would help them the most in the next week, and then pray a lot.
We're speaking with Dana Wilson, who is a professor emeritus at Ithaca College School of Music and a renowned composer whose works have been done all across the country and around the world as well. And one of his new works, Hold Fast to Dreams, receives its world premiere by the Lake Geneva Symphony Orchestra at their concert this Saturday night. Before we go any further with our conversation, I wanted to play just a little bit for our listeners of something by you that I especially love, which is the middle movement of your Concerto for Trumpet and String Orchestra. Before we play just a little bit of this piece, I wonder if you just have anything you want to say about it.
Sure, a little bit. It was commissioned by the International Trumpet Guild, and it was premiered in Europe by James Thompson, a really wonderful trumpet player, and I'm grateful to his beautiful playing on the recording as well.
Actually, the recording I have, it looks like Rex Richardson.
Oh, that's a wonderful recording too.
Okay.
yeah, Rex is in Virginia. He's probably one of the finest jazz players as well as classical players in the world, I would say. An amazing person and a beautiful, beautiful player, as you'll hear in this passage.
Right. And the second movement bears the subtitle of All That's Beautiful Drifts Away. So I'm always intrigued when a piece has a movement that's not titled Adagio or Grave or Lento, but bears a title like that.
Yeah, that's I love to quote various poems because they speak verbally so much more powerfully than I could possibly imagine, and that is from a Yeats poem, and I think it's from what's the name of the poem? Well, I'll think of it. But it's anyway, I love Yeats, and I love a lot of his allusions. And I just thought that phrase, all that's beautiful drifts away, there's a sadness to it, but there's also a conjuring of this beautiful image of drifting, and so I tried to capture those two in this movement.
I think you really did. Let's hear a little bit of this middle movement from Dana Wilson's trumpet concerto for trumpet and string orchestra. Gosh, I hate to intrude on that beautiful atmospheric music, the second movement of the Concerto for Trumpet and String Orchestra. I suspect, Professor Wilson, you derive great inspiration from writing music for wonderful musicians, wonderful soloists. On the other hand, a lot of what you compose is for ensembles, and in some cases you can have also a very direct relationship with a given orchestra or wind ensemble, but in many cases you're also writing pieces, I'm sure, for ensembles that are, in a sense, a group of strangers. Tell us what that experience is like when, for instance, such and such a state honors band wants a new piece from you for their newest festival. What is that experience like to compose under those circumstances?
Yeah, well, as you're suggesting, it's a real challenge because you don't know the people. I mean, the easiest thing, in a way, is for you to know the soloists and to know them on a personal level and to sort of sit there with them, at least spiritually, if you want to put it that way, as you're writing the notes down and envisioning them being up on stage playing it or singing it. It's an amazing relationship to achieve, even if it's in your own mind. When you don't know the ensemble, one of the first things you can do is to try to get as close as you can to that ensemble, talking to the conductor or whatever. And then you just have to kind of hold your breath and go for it and hope it's something that's meaningful to them. And then, of course, hoping that it'll be played later by other ensembles to make it have a statement that's meaningful in a broader, maybe more universal sense than just to that ensemble. What was interesting about this piece that the Lake Geneva Symphony Orchestra is going to play is that it was commissioned by a consortium of 19 ensembles. And so it was not just for one group, but 19 very different groups from each other. And I knew a couple of them, but none of them intimately. And so I just had to kind of say, you know, what would I like to be doing if I were in one of these ensembles, and to come as close as I could to that.
Wow. That is a challenge, in particular if we're talking about a various groups who might be at different ability levels, I suppose. But it sounds like this was an opportunity that you welcomed, maybe even relished.
Absolutely. I mean, what gets the juices going is not to do what you did last time, even though that might be fairly safe. But as in any journey that a person takes, It's a little more work to take a trip to a place you've never been before, but it's so much more gratifying, or at least gratifying in a different way. Mm. And so that's what I really relish in this opportunity and others like it.
Anything else you want to say about this piece, Hold Fast to Dreams?
Well, it's interesting. David Anderson, the music director of the orchestra, asked me about this, and I think as I reflect on it, there are two aspects. One is just the Hold Fast to Dreams concept is beautiful. It was originally written by Langston Hughes. It's a poem by Langston Hughes, another poem that I'm ripping off in a sense, but also using as inspiration. And his whole thing is, you know, if dreams die, life is a broken-winged bird that cannot fly. I mean, it's the only thing meaningful in life is to have dreams. And to really have dreams, you have to stick to them. You have to have fortitude around them. And so there's something sort of paradoxical. On the one hand, there's this so-called dreamy element to dreams, obviously. But then this fortitude element is almost the exact opposite. And both play such a key role with dreams. And so that's what intrigued me about this piece, to create this sort of grit and fortitude and persistence, and at the same time give it a sense that it has a dreamy quality. And so that was my challenge.
I suppose it's not possible for you to be present for all 19 of the premieres that this piece will receive, which I'm sure makes you sad.
Absolutely. I mean, I would love nothing more than to be there and to hear the orchestra. I've really enjoyed getting to know David over just a couple emails, but he seems like a really dynamic and wonderful conductor, and I'd love to see what he and the ensemble do with the piece. That's the first thing. I'd love to talk to audience members and get their feedback, and so I hope anyone will feel free to email me or call and tell me what they think of the piece, because that's ultimately, this is, even though it's about notes and dynamics and so forth, it's ultimately about human connection. And I would love this piece to connect on those in those ways, or for people to say, you know, this couldn't help me figure it out. And that's also meaningful, because that's part of the dialogue.
Right. There you go. Well, I encourage people, if they are so inclined, to reach out to you the way I did via your really lovely website, which is danawilson.org. And there is a link there for contact, which makes it possible for people to reach out to you. Again, this piece, Hold Fast to Dreams, receives a premiere performance with the Lake Geneva Symphony Orchestra for their concert Saturday night, conducted by David Anderson. And you can go to their website, lakegenevaorchestra.org, for more information. And Professor Dana Wilson, it's been great to make your acquaintance via the telephone today, and hear more about your career and about the marvelous music which you have created thus far. Very best wishes to you in the years ahead, and thank you for being part of the morning show today.
Thank you, Greg. It's been a pleasure to meet you in this way as well, and I really appreciate talking with you.
And to finish out this portion of the morning show, here is the finale to actually a chamber piece by Dana Wilson, a wonderful work called Mandala, and the second movement, which is titled Coming Full Circle, from a CD called Alchemy, American Works for Oboe and English Horn, featuring Mark Hill. Thank you. Tomorrow on the morning show, we're going to be learning about aerial arts. This is really an exciting form of, in a sense, movement and dance in which someone is suspended above the floor, sometimes a long distance above the floor, suspended by silken hammocks and or strips of fabric. And it's incredible what can be done. And there's going to be a special exhibition of aerial arts, a fundraiser coming up on Friday night called Over the Rainbow. And we will be hearing all about aerial arts tomorrow on the morning show. And on Friday, you'll hear my conversation with Joshua A. Douglas, who is a professor at the University of Kentucky College of Law, talking about his intriguing book, Vote for Us, How to Take Back Our Elections and Change the Future of Voting. In this book, he explores efforts across the country to try to expand the voting rolls and to break down barriers that discourage certain people from exercising their constitutional right to vote. A very, very interesting book, and we will be talking about it on Friday's morning show. Remember,